Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. Remember that the tournament regulations are only for tournaments. Games you play outside that don't have to follow those rules. This includes the Corellian conflict, where if you want to use those extra 100 points to buy 4 or 5 transports, you certainly can. I won't, because they don't have any side batteries, which is an obvious design flaw. Get some Mon Cal engineers on that right away! Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you!
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 29th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. Well, it appears that Fantasy Flight looked at the Great Rhymer Nerf FAQ and said, "Hold my blue milk." We have a new FAQ, and if you haven't heard about it, it's an enormous game changer, especially with worlds so close. Some stuff got some nice clarifications, like that Thrawn's dials can be taken as tokens, and Biggs can't redirect damage to Ryken zombies. But there was a bunch of big stuff in there. First of all, it's a good thing that I haven't talked about Relay yet, because it just got a huge change. Relay used to have no range restriction from that VCX or shuttle to the ship giving the squadron order, but now it has to be within the normal medium range, or long with boosted comms, to relay out that order. I think I've seen more complaints about this one than any other change, so I'd like to throw some water on this fire. Yes, you can't do relay from anywhere on the board anymore, and that's a new restriction. But honestly, my experience is that even with relay, most of the fights are happening in one area, and your carrier ships are often already in that vicinity. Yeah, you might want to invest in some boosted comms for extra range, but the only thing that's really being hurt by this are lists designed to have the carrier ship fly away from the battle and still contribute through relay, which is a thing against the spirit of the game, in my opinion. Next up, Gallant Haven no longer zeroes out damage entirely. A minimum of 1 damage will always get through. Since the release of Biggs and Jan Ors, it's been pretty easy to brace and move damage around so that fighters are now only taking 1, and then the Haven reduces that to 0. Now, it helps with the big hits, but like a brace token, single damage attacks will still get through. What this means is that Gallant Haven isn't best buddies with aces anymore, but you should have it get real chummy with generic fighters who don't have other damage mitigation. Rounding out the Rebel side, squadrons activated with Yavaris can no longer double tap if they've moved during Yavaris activation. This means fighter coordination team no longer works when it's on Yavaris, so if you want to inch your fighters into range before hitting that sweet 2-shot attack, you're going to have to put that FCT on another ship. This also means we'll probably be seeing less flight commanders on Yavaris, as the combo of that and FCT is now dust. But it's still got value, since Yavaris can't ever take things like boosted comms, and it might need to move into range before it can activate. It can still relay, though. For Imperials, the big one is turning the ISD Avenger title into an exhaust to use. This doesn't do a lot for the main firepower potential of it, as you're still going to get that big front arc shot off, but the days of double arcing, gunnery teams, and advanced gunnery on your Avenger are gone now. As someone who's eaten a boarding trooper Avenger double arc at close range from a Kuat, I can tell you that being able to spend defense tokens on the side arc shot will keep you alive. Plus, the ISD player still forces you to burn those defense tokens to survive, so it's still pretty good. Additionally, since it's an exhaust card now, the MS-1 Ion Cannon card has become slightly more useful. Very, very slightly. The final bit is actually in the tournament FAQ, so like Akbar said, it's just for that level of play. Flotillas are now limited to 2 in a fleet, and if you only have flotillas left on the board, you lose. Now, there's some confusion right now if that means you're tabled and your opponent gets the full 400 points, or if it's just a loss and they only score what they destroyed. So I guess that's going to be cleared up fairly quickly, I hope. I do fully sympathize with those who bought a bunch of flotillas that are now useless. However, after seeing the prevalence of taking one or two line ships and then padding out the list with three or four or even five flotillas to let you activate your fighting ships last was also against the spirit of the game as I see it. I'm glad we're moving focus back to the iconic ships, not just having a bunch of transports zipping around. So yeah, big changes to the game. And the big winners of all of this are, well, MS-1s, boosted comms, Hera, because her ability isn't range-limited, the Centaur title on the Arcitens is also unaffected, and the Armada community. We get a good shake-up of list building, and those of us who don't already own two flotillas of each kind will probably be able to pick them up for a steal about now. Now, on to the squadrons, starting with the TIE Advanced Uniques. The new TIE Advanced Ace is Zerdic Strom, and I don't think there's a more useful ace in the entirety of the conflict batch. I didn't say the best. There's more powerful aces and aces whose abilities suit their role much better, but none of them are as welcome or likely to be used in every list than Strom. The simple fact is that no matter what his abilities or stats are, he's a 15-point escort ace when your only other option to get those two braces is Darth Vader at 21 points. Honestly, I don't know what else I need to say. So that's it for this episode. Seriously, though, Zerdic is great for just that reason. He has a weak anti-squadron attack, sure, but it doesn't matter, because all he's there to do is absorb damage and have two braces. How you're going to use him is just like every other TIE Advanced, so let's talk about how he's different. Zerdic has the standard stat line for an Advanced in most respects. 4 speed, 5 hull, black die against ships. His anti-squad dice is just 3 unreliable reds, though, which makes him lack some punch. However, his ability helps even that out a bit. It allows him to deal a damage to a friendly squadron in order to reroll any or all of his dice. That's nice and all, but when a sizable portion of your fighter complement only has 3 hull to begin with, dealing out a third of that for a reroll isn't very enticing. It's for that reason that I say, don't bother. Just accept that he's going to be unreliable for damage. Certainly, from time to time, there's going to be that clutch situation where something just has to die on his attack, where that trade is going to be worth it. But in general, I say just give it a pass. Now, obviously, you can build around it a little bit. You could put a YV-666 in with him to take the reroll hits, which is another of the rare spots that it could be useful. Of course, if you're looking to put damage on something, Bossk loves it. Though, after the first point, any further points are just hurting him for no gains. But again, honestly, I think you should just not spend for rerolls on those reds unless it's super important. And then, hitting a 3-hull squadron is totally worth it. One last thing to keep in mind, that reroll isn't just for his red dice. Zerdic's ability says while attacking, which means he can also reroll his black anti-ship die. Again, I'd only use this when it's a make-or-break roll, but you can take comfort in the reliability of that black die's damage, at least. You're going to use Zerdic a lot. Not because of anything about his stats, just because he's only 3 points more than a standard advanced to get 2 brace tokens instead of 9 points more for 2 brace tokens. And until another TIE Advanced Ace comes along, it's the best you got. The unique advanced squadron is Tempest Squadron. Like the others, it's 1 point more than a basic one and has the basic stat line I quoted above, with the exception that it has the usual 3 blue dice for dogfighting. It keeps escort and then adds bomber. It also isn't something I recommend, as it runs into the Vader problem. Darth Vader as a squadron is problematic because you're spending a lot of points on something that's going to be the first thing attacked. While Tempest isn't nearly as many points as Vader, it's even easier to destroy due to not having any defense tokens. Having another bomber with a black die is great, but you're not likely to see any use of that die with Tempest. It's just going to get shot down with focused fire. Sure, it's cheaper than a TIE Advanced and a TIE Bomber combined, but at least you'll get use from both of those in their own roles. That said, it is only 1 point more for a potential boost in damage after you've shot down the enemy fighter screen. And coupled with intel, you can send it in with the rest of your bombers and keep the heat off of them while dealing out some torpedo hits of your own. So, yeah, in general, I'd leave Tempest Squadron in the hangar. With a lack of defense tokens, it will likely be the priority target for your opponent, since it's easier to destroy than Zerdic or Vader, but more expensive and with an extra ability over a vanilla Advanced. You're better off with either another Advanced or a TIE Bomber, unless you're using it to screen for those bombers as above. After the break, it's A-Wing time to round out the Corellian Conflict Squadrons.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and it's time for some high-speed Rebel fighter action. The A-Wing ace is Shara Bay, and she's frankly incredible. She sports the usual A-Wing ace stats, 3 blues for squadrons and 1 black for ships, 5 speed, 4 hull, brace, scatter, defense. She also has counter, and what a counter it is. Shara not only has counter at 3, a 1 die improvement, but she counts crits for damage when rolling those counter dice. This means she's unlikely to have a completely useless roll, except for the dreaded triple accuracy. That ability is what sets her apart from other A-Wings and gives her a unique role. Other A-Wings are lightning-fast interceptors that are best used to hop over the initial scrum and pin down critical single-enemy squadrons in the back, and Shara can definitely do that. Tycho likes to move around and hit whatever he's needed to, but not Shara. Shara's almost best when dropped into the middle of the dogfight. Now, don't take that literally. She won't last long if she's severely outnumbered, but if she can engage 2 or even 3 enemies at once, she's going to do well, which is 1 or 2 more enemies than you really want to do with a standard A-Wing. When Shara locks down an enemy squadron, that squadron isn't going anywhere soon without intel. In fact, they might not survive trying to get away from her. The more they struggle against her, the more damage she's going to do to them. Between her scatter and that counter, she's very likely to outlast the squadrons she's got engaged. Another bonus to Shara is that she really runs on her own. Squadron commands are just gravy for her past the initial one that allows her to act earlier. Give her one to get her into position and have a first attack, then she can basically just sit there and counter away, happily waiting for the squadron phase to do her own weaker non-counter strike. The high cost of dealing with her, coupled with that activation efficiency, are the major reasons why you'll see Shara in most light squadron lists. She's able to hold up more than her fair share of squadrons from getting to your ships, and as such, is very attractive when you're going minimal. Shara naturally works well with Torin Farr to keep her damage output as high as possible. She doesn't work super well with escort fighters, though, since they hog all the incoming attacks she likes to counterpunch off of, so either don't have them in your list, or, ideally, because they're so good, don't put any escorts at distance 1 of the squadrons you want her to pick a fight with. This can be tricky for timing and planning, especially with your opponent doing mean things like activating their own squadrons. In general, I advise sending her in first, then moving up your escorts to engage everything else. Shara hits like pow, but hits back like pow. She fits into any list, so use her often and make your opponent have to think about how to attack her. At the very least, she'll slow them down way more than any A-Wing should. Green Squadron is the unique A-Wing, and when they aren't crashing into the bridges of Star Destroyers, they're popping up in Armada. As per usual, Green Squadron is 1 point more than a base A-Wing, and it has the same stat line. Where it differs is that it loses 1 point of counter and gains Bomber. This tweaks the role it plays just slightly, but enough to make a difference. Green Squadron is almost the exact opposite of Shara Bay. You don't want it holding up squadrons because it only has counter one, and that's not going to do a lot. It also doesn't have any defense tokens, so there's that too. It still works really well as an interceptor, launching at speed 5 and hitting something before it can react, but where it really shines is as the fastest bomber the Rebel Alliance can field. Unless your opponent keeps some squadrons back to guard their ships, Green Squadron can just hop right over the dogfight and start launching missiles. It's not going to do a lot of damage, but against a smaller ship, it can drop a shield or two before the carrier makes an attack, or just hang out and keep firing if there's no unengaged enemies to go after it. Obviously, Green Squadron likes Torin Farr and Bomber Command, and synergizes well with Nora Wexley. No surprises there. Where it really shines is with Sato, where just like above, it can go speed 5 to get right into range of a ship to trigger his ability, and maybe fire off a bomb to boot. Green also really likes having intel around, as while it likes to shoot at squadrons, the flexibility to choose its target is very nice. The obvious solution to not having intel is, of course, blasting everything around it until all that's left is ships. Green Squadron is a great addition to almost any Rebel fleet. You get the hitting power and speed of an A-Wing with the bombing power of a Y-Wing in one package. Whether it's adding anti-squadron punch to a bomber wing or adding bombing power to a dogfight-focused list, Green Squadron should find a home in your launch bay. It just covers the bases that you're not covering, and that's amazing. That's it for this episode. Next time, I'm going to have to remember how to review ships as I talk about the Pelta and the Arcitans. For now, I'm off to Disneyland in 2 weeks for May the 4th Be With You, and I'm going to try my hardest to have another show out by then, unless Thanos destroys the world, of course. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Ready to trim down on transports, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.